debate is big.
All right, let's watch your intro and then we'll get into it. Winter Falls Show. 3 minutes.
Lynn Ertel, all the way from Baltimore, Maryland. Hello, Lynn.
Turn it up. When I pick a song, it's about a subject that I'm addressing.
Fenton says Lynn for president. Are you running?
Presidents are stooges. The president is the crisis actor in chief. I'd rather be like Stalin, like Commissar, you know? I'd rather have real power. Don't even take me there. You know, Brian called me up, Brian from Brian and Jenna.
All right, Biochar Brian.
Brian Jenna wanted me to mention the fact that he's got a lot of Trojan horses and stalking horses and shills in the conspiratainment world that are pushing memes directly from communitarian law. And one of these is the phrase, the intentional community.
I heard that.
And I'm over blaming groups like Catholics, the Jews, the Jesuits. I name the individuals who have committed crimes for which they ought to be arrested and convicted and
turn it up.
Subject to some pretty severe punishment. Things like racketeering and treason, not just fraud. I'd rather be like Stalin, like Commissar, you know? I'd rather have real power, you know? Don't even take me there.
Turn it up. I can't hear it.
I heard that.
I heard that.
But I'm not talking about Jews, Jesuits, Catholics, black, white. I'm pointing at shills.
So who do you want to know if it was that they were
Jesuits? I don't care if they were or not. Guys, come over to Fake O2. If it's good, you're going to find it on Fake O2.
Turn it up.
And we don't have ads on Fake O2.
Turn it up.
No, there's no ads yet.
Why?
Turn it up.
I can't hear it. Guys, come over to Fake O2. Fake O2.
All right, good evening, good afternoon, good morning, and good night, Thursday, February 26, 2026, 02-26-26. What a time. Lynn, how you been?
Hey, I'm all right.
I was trying to get this thing streaming on Substack. I still haven't quite figured that out. I'm not quite smart enough yet. That's the only channel that really makes it hard to do automatically.
I've heard complaints about that, yes.
I didn't realize, but Catherine Watt left Substack because Substack was censoring or doing something negative. She didn't really get into it, but
I'm surprised at that. I hadn't really seen any censorship on Substack yet.
Well, there was something that they were doing. She didn't get into it. I'm not sure why she didn't get into it, but she just left and didn't say anything, and somebody else left, or I think it was Jessica Rose, maybe an anti-vaxxer. She was she left Substack. If anyone can remember what the details are, please let me know.
There's plenty of anti-COVID, anti-vax stuff on Substack. I'm posting it in our forum all the time. So,
well,
Lloyd Miller, among others, he's a big listener over at
IPS.
Yeah, he's posted a lot of that. Of course, he's claiming there were real casualties from the vax. He thinks the vax really was toxic. But also, I've posted stuff on Substack from probably from
Christine Massey. Is that her name? Or
yeah, yeah, that's right. She has
and other. I mean, I'm surprised to hear. I find it. My experience is that Substack hasn't censored stuff that's exposing the COVID psyop, but maybe I don't know. I don't know what it is. I haven't heard any complaints about Substack.
All right. Well, if we could just ask Perplexity if we wanted what the problem was, and maybe it would tell us.
Yeah. You know, if you want to get into
where
that.
But Catherine Watt go of Substack. Was there a Substack issue? Let's see. Well, pretty okay. I am live on Substack, as you can see on my screen. I'm not quite sure. Okay, here's some information. Okay, another writer, Jessica Hockett, mentioned that Watt removed Bailiwick News from Substack a few weeks after I left.
Oh.
And okay, that doesn't explain anything. Okay, so nothing there. But it was Jessica Hockett.
Yeah, she's published a lot on the COVID, yeah.
Okay, so here's her thing here. And is there anything about Catherine Watt on here? But I don't know why Catherine Watt wouldn't say, oh, here's Catherine Watt. My reasons for leaving Substack were very similar to yours. They overlap, and there were some in addition to the ones you have described. My path to the exit began when Vic Park petition, Excess Deaths AU, posted in early July 2025 about the financial leverage blocking exit from the platform. I paused my paid subscriptions about a week later, closed my Stripe account in mid-September, and closed my Substack in early December.
I had an issue. I had to cancel a credit card over that.
Oh.
And it may have been Substack that caused the problem. Basically, you know, I put up $50, you know, to the Tim Osman.
Yeah.
And I might have subscribed through Substack, and the next thing I know, my credit card, I got a call from the credit from Visa, the credit union where they said we're showing 1, 2, 3 repeated attempts to take more money out, more $50 here, $50 there. I said the only one that lets and I wrote to Tim Osman. I said, "What's going on here?" And okay. He said, "Well, no, your original $50 subscription was processed, but I had to cancel the credit. The credit union told me the best thing to do is cancel the credit card. So it's possible that Substack, a bug in Substack, might have kept triggering that. You know, we're going to take $50 more and $50 more and $50 more, because I don't think Tim Osman would have been doing that. So maybe there is an issue with Substack. Is that what Christine is saying? That this
that's what Jessica Hockett is implying. Hockett, yeah. Well, it doesn't exactly say. I'll put a note to the in the show notes if you guys want to read that. But whatever the case, she had a great Substack.
And it's just now, Substack is just a blogging tool, right?
Yes, yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's their platform and they do the money, you see. As soon as money gets involved, they take their cut and distribute the money. But yeah. They kind of make it easy. They make it easier, I suppose. And they do the management of the subscription. I just don't like it because it blocks you from doing all kinds of things like commenting in many cases. So it's frustrating. Anyway.
Just before I begin, we'll get this out of the way quickly, because in the intro that you always play, there's mention of Trojan horses, and Brian and Jenna are into spotting Trojan horses.
Oh, are they?
For communitarianism, basically.
Oh, yeah, right.
And Brian considers Thomas Massey, the congressman, who got all the Epstein data, basically humiliated Trump and exposed Trump, but also now has put forward a measure in the Congress that's going to force every member of the Congress to publicly declare whether they're for war with Iran or not. Oh. So he's a Constitution guy. But anyway, Brian thinks that Thomas Massey is a kind of a communitarian Trojan horse based on the fact that he runs a farm or a ranch where He raises organic grass-fed cattle and sells raw milk and, you know, the usual stuff that people living close to the land are doing these days.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was rather weak and rather lame, but I went out and started researching and I found, lo and behold,
mm-hmm.
that Thomas Massey, as a young man, was inducted into the Jacques de Molay Society.
Okay.
Which is the youth auxiliary.
The Masons.
For the Scottish Rite, yeah.
Yeah.
Named after Jacques de Molay, the founder of the Templars, who, not the founder, he was the last Grand Master of the Order, who was arrested on Friday the 13th, and then they were all held for about 7 years and tortured and then burned alive, that's, so we're told.
That's the story, yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, there are quite a few accounts of it. And all their assets were seized by Philip le Bel, the King of France. So, yes, Massey was in the de Molay Society. So was Bill Clinton as a youth.
Okay.
So, you know, all kinds of organizations and cults have their youth.
Youth wing, yeah.
You got their youth wing, young. You know. And so, yeah, I think it would be curious to ask Thomas Massey, by the way, are you a Freemason? You don't mind us asking. I don't think he'd mind being asked. And how do you feel about secret society oaths as against your oath to uphold and defend the Constitution? Does one trump the other? That would be the question I'd ask him. Does the oath you take as a Freemason? And he may not have gone on to join the Freemasons as an adult. I don't know. The other thing is, there's a longtime friend of Thomas Massey's named Ron Huffines, H-U-F-F-I-N-E-S, who is running for Congress in Texas, and he's very close to Trump. And he's basically another one of these Zionist neocons. But, you know, I'm sure Massey has lifelong friends across all political factions, so... But I consider that more substantive than to say that just because he has a co-op type arrangement with people for his cattle ranch and his farm,
yeah,
in order to help, you know, finance organic food, I think it's pretty common. Yeah, it's kind of weak to call
it. It's a way to get around rules and regulations. That's right. All it is.
Right. And if something's really local,
you're not allowed to sell directly to the public unless you follow the rules and regulations.
Right.
And if you give them a share, a farm share, you get around it.
He's in Kentucky, and mm-hmm. the laws may be very different there. So,
no, I doubt it. Right. They're probably pretty standard. It says here he's not a Mason, but he was part of the de Molay.
Okay. So he didn't go on to...
No.
So that wouldn't even be a relevant question at this point. But we could ask him about the experience and what he thought of it, you know.
Yeah, sure.
And what he thinks about, you know, widespread suspicion that Freemasonic style organizations, especially among the police and the military, are control the society. He might have some interesting insights on that. I got to watch an hour and a half interview with Marjorie Taylor Greene today.
Right. She retired, right? Or quit?
Yeah. Yeah. And I should post it in the recommended sites, maybe. But she lets it all hang out. She really does. She doesn't hold back. And so if you want to know what she's about, I recommend this interview. I should remind people. Marjorie Taylor Greene, almost immediately following the Parkland, which is to say the Parkland fake mass shooting.
Yeah.
At Marjorie Stoneman Douglas.
Yeah, very similar to her name.
She immediately called it out as a hoax, said there were crisis actors, and boy, and if you don't believe me, go on out there and look at all the articles.
Right.
That she was really ruthlessly attacked, and there's even one video of her, I guess, walking to work at the Capitol and someone approaching her and challenging her, and she just kind of blows them off. She says, yeah, she says it was a, she, so, you know.
What's her name again? Marjorie Taylor?
Greene.
Green, yeah, okay.
Yeah, so she called out Parkland as a hoax. What more do you guys want? I mean, I'll bet if we asked her, she'd probably call out a lot of these events as hoaxes. So that took a lot of, you know, I really feel like she's very sincere. I don't think she's, if you watch this interview, you'll walk away saying, well, there it is. That's who she is. That's what she believes. And man, she doesn't spare anybody. She doesn't spare Trump.
So she apparently doesn't spare. She did respond to a Facebook post and said exactly, endorsing it as a staged event.
Right.
They call it false flag planned shooting. And then in another 2018 Facebook thread, she also replied, "This is all true," to a user claiming that none of the school shootings were real or done by the people who were supposedly arrested. Again, embracing the idea that such shootings were hoaxes or staged events. After public backlash, once these posts surfaced in 2021, she publicly walked back or tried to distance herself from those earlier false flag claims about Parkland and other mass shooting events. So you're
I'd like to see that where she publicly distanced herself, but she knows. She knows. She's not stupid. She knows. So she really goes after she really exposes Trump, who she exposes the whole system. She says the reason she left is it was really a waste of time, and she wants to educate people to the fact that there's no way they're going to vote themselves out of this situation, that the whole place is totally corrupt. And she explains the structure of it in terms of the money, how votes are handled, whether you get on committees or not. She, of course, was kicked off all the committees when the Democrats, she came in there in 2020. So I'll go ahead and I'll post the link to the interview, even though it doesn't get into any fake events.
Here she is.
Breaking news this afternoon, Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene is admitting that major school shootings are not fake. After CNN and Watchdog Media Matters uncovered inflammatory social media posts which linked Greene, she in fact did claim the Parkland and Sandy Hook massacres were false flags and defended her harassment of Parkland survivor David Hogg.
I looked up his age before I talked to him, found out he was the legal adult. And so that's why I talked to him. And I told him, you have no idea what you're doing. These type of bills would leave Americans defenseless. These are not red flag incidences. They are not fake. And it's terrible, the loss that these families go through and their friends as well. And it should never happen.
What a disappointment.
Well, they got to her.
She backed down.
They got to her.
They got to her. They got to her.
Probably said, you'll never get elected again. And that probably, what else do you need? Well, you're not going to get any money.
I mean, I'm telling you, initially, she was very strong on this. I thought, wow, she wasn't the only one, you know. There were other, like Kathy Barnett, who was running for the Senate in Pennsylvania, called out these Sandy Hook and Parkland. I mean, there are people out there. And they must really be subjected to intense pressure to back out on this. So, yeah, that's a big disappointment.
Yeah, that's a good sign. Yeah, well, I remember she recanted and then you could stop listening to her. But, yeah, I guess they got to her. And these people start running for Congress the minute they get into office.
She explains all that. She explains all that. So
does she? Okay, good.
Yeah, it's an extensive discussion with the Anomaly. He's you know,
on YouTube.
Yeah, there's a YouTube and a Facebook version of it available.
What's the link? So
go out to Anomaly, ANZERO MALY. I listen to just about all his stuff because he's kind of one of the more thought. You know, he knows we didn't walk on the moon. He knows a lot, so he just is afraid to get near that subject much.
Everybody, today I'm excited to be joined with Marjorie Taylor Greene, former
congresswoman,
full-time American patriot. Appreciate
you. Where does she, do you know any idea where she says it? I'll just have to watch the whole thing.
Well, it says what?
Just admits that, well, does she, what does
it
she
never say? That's the whole thing.
Oh, it never comes up.
It never comes up in this particular interview. But she does explain how fake the Congress is. And how tightly controlled it is. And how you can't get anything done there. Mm-hmm. And she discusses legislation that she proposed. And and how Trump is covering up for a lot of stuff. I mean, it's a good interview, I think.
Okay, that's great.
In many respects, but...
I'll listen to it.
I'm really disappointed.
I'll put it on the DL list.
Yeah, to hear that she backed down on Sandy Hook and Parkland. And I don't believe it. Let me put it this way. I think she knows. She knows, and somehow or other they forced it. They did an Alex Jones. Well, Alex Jones. I wouldn't compare her to Alex Jones. But no.
But she also knows that she can't talk about it, really.
Well, one of the things she says in this interview, mm-hmm. she goes into great detail on threats that were made against her once Trump called her as a traitor. She says there are threats on her children. She has three kids.
Yeah.
Threats on her life. And she sounds like she was generally terrified that there were going to be physical attacks on her family once Trump denounced her as a traitor for demanding access to all the FBI files and all that, you know. So, yeah, that's just one thing to look at if you want to see how the...
All right, I'm going to watch that. That's a good one. Thank you. I'll put a link to that in the show notes. All right, you watch the State of the Union.
Yeah, first let's get this I want to address something, get it out of the way first, because I think it's important conceptually, and then I'll get into Trump. I'll try to make this quick.
All right.
I've shown you all the how the simulacrum works. I'm showing it on the screen.
I don't see Oh, here we go. Yeah, we saw this before.
Right. Now, what's important is the simulacrum is when these two merge and become almost exactly, one is right on top of the other.
Yeah.
Where the fake and the real completely merge. And at that point, a material reality, a physical reality has been created based on the original simulation, the fakery, that bears no relationship at all to the original. Well, there is no original event if it's simulated. In other words, it's the real consequences stand on their own, independent of the original fake that inspired them. Think of the Department of Homeland Security. Over time, every agency of the government, from FEMA to the originally it was called Immigration and Naturalization Service, and then they renamed it to ICE. All of these agencies report to DHS, Department of Homeland Security. And Department of Homeland Security is entirely the product of the 9/11 PSYOP. That's a perfect example of a simulacrum. The war on terror, right? The real consequences. So when you talk about what's going on in Mexico right now, and I'm hearing commentators all over social media saying that the cartels they're claiming that the cartels themselves are putting out AI videos exaggerating this. And that there's a lot of people saying that denouncing material coming out as fake, as AI, stuff with burning cars, staging to make it look really bad, especially in Puerto Vallarta. The entire state of Jalisco, I understand, was shut down. So they're talk about the simulacrum. They're really impacting people's lives to convince them that this is real. But what I want to point out here, and I've posted just the some details on this. I'm going to share another one from our Israel Hamas Gaza. If you can see it.
No, not yet.
Yeah, I'm trying to share. Let me try this again. Screen share. Here we go. Okay.
Okay. What's this?
Well, the question I pose is this.
Cast of thousands.
Right. Let me walk it up a little bit so you can see what we're talking about here.
Yeah,
because I have a whole thread on this.
We've talked about this many times.
The question I'm posing is, if war is just another hoax,
yeah,
then why worry about it? And what I examine here is the recent redeployment of the aircraft carrier Gerald R. Ford. Anybody remember him? He was once a,
of course,
a United States president.
I remember him.
Right. And they've named this aircraft carrier after him.
Mm-hmm.
And they're now telling us that it has been redeployed
to the Gulf.
All the way from the Caribbean to the Persian Gulf.
It's got nowhere else to go. Was it going to go park in Norfolk?
Well, here's the thing about that. You can say war is fake.
Okay.
But what you need to know is, how much does this movable closed movie set cost as it sails from the Caribbean to the Persian Gulf and then back again, if it ever comes back? I assume it will. I wanted to know, deploying a U.S. aircraft carrier strike group such as the USS Gerald R. Ford cost taxpayers over $11 million per day in operational expenses, which includes personnel, fuel, and maintenance. Moving this force from the Caribbean to the Persian Gulf, because I guess it's a whole escort for the carrier,
yeah,
and all the planes that are on the carrier and everything else, entails significant ongoing logistical costs that it can exceed $20 million daily when including support ships and increased operational tempo. That's from the Guam Daily Post. Guam, of course, is a U.S. naval base.
Okay.
And they break down the deployment cost factors.
High tempo operations. Oh, that's go fast.
Right. And I'm passing this as a note to Les Luthor, Dave J., John LeBond, Tim Osman, anybody else out there who's going to say that war is a hoax, because the money spent is not a hoax. And the troops moved around are sailors. Not a hoax either.
No, that's
and I compare
real.
This.
I agree with that. Yeah.
I compare this to a big budget movie production from the old Hollywood period, which is now passing into memory because digital graphics are going to make all that ridiculous. But Wag the Dog, if you haven't seen that movie, you should.
I saw it. It's a great movie.
Right. It costs money to produce. Any big budget movie does. The 1959 epic Ben-Hur was the most expensive film made at the time. You got to watch the chariot race and the naval battle
You've
in Ben-Hur. Incredibly expensive. Cast of thousands, real chariots, real horses. Made at a time, and that doesn't even count the salaries of the top stars, the box office draws, big draws for the box office, salaries and all that, with a production budget of roughly $15 million. So moving an aircraft carrier exceeds a big budget movie, but it's kind of on the order of magnitude of that. It's in the millions. They're saying that would be approximately $133 to $139 million in constant dollars, which I guess means how much it would cost today to produce an epic like Ben-Hur, and included 10,000 extras. That's an army, guys. This movie had an army of 10,000 extras. A $1 million chariot race set. If you've ever seen the set for Ben-Hur, wow, they recreate the circuit, the arena, the Circus Maximus, where the chariot races were. And also, of course, the marketing, $14.7 million marketing push. And that corresponds to the PSYOPs budget for something like this stunt they're pulling, moving the carrier group from the Caribbean to Iran. The other movie is, of course, Giant, 1956, pioneering $5 million epic Western. This is where they moved into this little town called Marfa, Texas, and just took it over. They took it over. There's a number of movies that have been made about the making of this movie that explore how the town was never the same after that. Among the most expensive films of its time, 1956, starring Elizabeth Taylor, Rock Hudson, and James Dean, the 200-minute film chronicled Texas's shift from cattle ranching to oil, filmed on location in Marfa, Texas, earned 11 Oscars. So I conclude that these hoaxes are more expensive than you think, especially when the money isn't fake. And then I include this graphic from William R. Gaines' Mad Magazine of Alfred E. Newman saying, "What me worry? It's all fake. It's all theater. All a closed movie set. So why worry about it? Just pay for it and stop your whining, bitches." That's my response to the people who say that we can dismiss war as just a simple hoax.
Well, you're saying that has real effects, and I agree with that. Real lifelong effects. But are they doing what they say they're doing? And you're kind of saying, well,
they're never doing what they're saying they're doing.
So you're saying it doesn't really matter.
Exactly. And the effects are worse.
The effects are real. So I agree with that.
Sounds like we got a call, but
no, that was my that was a message system there. So my thumbnail creator is asking, what is MTG?
Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Yeah.
So the thing is, as you watch these events in Mexico, or Trump said back in June, they claimed they completely destroyed Iran's nuclear capability and we're patting themselves
on
the
back. How many times have they destroyed?
Yeah, now that we've got it's like we got to go back to the moon. We never went to the moon. You know,
it's Groundhog Day, and pretty soon we're going to hear that they're going to take out a top nuclear scientist. Every year we hear the same stories. Every year, three times a year. Boring. They just keep repeating the same old stories.
And people, I guess people are willing to pay for it. That's really, I don't think people want to pay for it at all.
Well, we got a caller in. A caller in. Where are you calling from? What's your name?
Willard from Florida.
Hey, Willard from Florida. How you doing? We don't have a song for you yet. Sorry.
That's all right.
ETL, get on it.
I had these teenagers around 20 ask me a couple questions about 9/11 that they're interested in, and I told them I'd ask y'all.
Oh, beautiful. Thanks, Willard. Bring us back to 9/11. I love it.
Right. By the way, the Epstein thing has opened up 9/11 like a bloody wound because of Lutnick and others.
Oh, apparently, crisis actor in chief.
Yeah, apparently they were talking about setting up their there's a discussion in the Epstein emails about setting up a shadow commission to investigate 9/11. And Maxwell was involved in that. And the thing is, it's really crazy because...
Did you see the video of Maxwell walking around in Quebec City?
Oh, that's fake.
Is that fake? Okay. Well, no, the girl looked pretty similar.
Yeah. No, not old enough. Not old enough.
Too young? Okay.
Yeah, much too young. Skin much too smooth. That's been deconstructed. And actually,
too bad. That was funny.
I have a post. Since you mentioned that, let me share this. Because since you brought that up,
yeah.
Oh gosh. Here we go. Take a look. Going back and forth here is tricky. Take a look at the thread that I posted.
I'm waiting. Willard, talk if you have any more questions. Well, Lynn is.
Yeah, I'm sharing the screen right now.
Okay.
It's pure fakeology. Can you see it?
Right. Yep.
So this is the, they're talking about that alleged deposition.
Yeah.
Under oath. And everyone is analyzing these pictures, and it's pretty clear that he actually compares the two faces. See if I can show you. Right. He shows how they're two completely different. The eyes are different. The nose is different.
Okay.
So what we've got here, whoever gave that deposition is either, I don't know, a CGI or an actor. Who knows? And this is the kind of thing that is going on all over social media. all at the, this is how the Epstein thing is the gift that keeps on giving, because it gets people into fakeology. It has to, because there's so much faking going on. But the big thing, of course, is that clip of Trump and Howard Lutnick, and Trump explaining Howard Lutnick's activities on the day of 9/11. Has people seen that? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Well, we've seen all the Lutnick things.
It's incredible.
The crying.
Yeah, he's saying, oh yeah, Howard, he had to take his kid to kindergarten. Actually, it's a lie. The school where Lutnick's kid was enrolled actually opened a week earlier on September 5th. So Lutnick is lying about that. But what people are really upset about, and I saw this on a couple, like Sam Tripoli gets into this. Lutnick pocketed the millions of dollars settlement and divided it up among his friends from 9/11. So the Epstein thing draws people into, you can see it draws them into fakeology, crisis actors, doppelgangers. It draws them into 9/11
right
again. So I'll let that go for now. But I'm trying to remember, this is in response to a question that was just raised, right? About, I don't know. I thought I was responding to a question that was raised. Let's speak back to Willard again.
Okay, I had three questions they had. I gave them, you know, Simon Shack and September Clues and the whole take.
By the way, these are young people, right? Gen Z?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, about 19, 20 years old.
And they're interested in 9/11. They're not bored by it, are they? Yeah. Okay.
No, they're open-minded to fake out the fakeologist's take, because when I presented it to them. But here's the questions they had. The first one, because I told them there is no planes, and they said, okay, then how were plane parts found in the debris field? So how would you answer that?
They were planted. Like everything else, they were planted. It's called an orgy of evidence. If you don't have enough evidence, you're planted.
Oh, yeah, right. Good point. Right? Yeah, that's right.
I mean, come on. Cops do it all the time. They plant drugs on people. Cops carry throwaway revolvers. So if they shoot, he's pulling a gun on me. They just, you understand? They can always plant evidence. That's what cops do. That's what cops do.
Here's the next one. I told them about the military grade smoke screen and how there was a controlled demolition. And they wanted to know, how could the smoke screen be sustained all day long? You know, to conceal the... They could understand concealing the towers going down, but how could they keep it maintained all day long?
Well, they said the smoke was coming out of World Trade Center Tower 7. That's where they had admitted diesel machines or diesel tanks for the generator.
That would explain why they waited till 5:30 that evening to take down.
Exactly.
The Salomon Brothers building.
I'm not sure. I'm kind of puzzled where the diesel comes from. I guess it comes from the ground and tanks. I can't see a floor in a building having diesel tanks in it.
Underground. They'd store it underground.
Yeah, okay. So it's underground. Okay, yeah. So above ground or underground, I suppose that makes more sense. And they would just pump it up to the floors. That makes sense.
I'm sharing a screen right now about Lutnick and Cantor Fitzgerald drilling for 9/11. They had practice drills for 9/11 ahead of time.
Right. And that was the main institution that was allegedly in the World Trade Center. They had the most floors. Cantor Fitzgerald.
That's right. They were probably the only ones that were there, if they were there at all.
Exactly. Well, everyone had a satellite set of offices after 1993. They all moved out.
Yeah, it was just a prestige thing at that point.
Mm-hmm. Well, the excuse was the building was unsafe and they had to continue operations somewhere else. Makes sense to me.
Yeah.
I'm not seeing your screen. Oh, here we go.
Yeah, let me see if I can move. Here we go. So Can you see that? The highlighted names are the Cantor Fitzgerald employees.
No, I'm just looking at the topics page.
Oh, I got the wrong one. Hold on a second. Mm-hmm. So I want Trump promises. Trump promises this will be the age of reveal. Here we go. And what's really good is because of the Epstein flap, everyone is and Lutnick and others too who are involved. I mean, you know, it's like the COVID too. Epstein's involved in the COVID with Bill Gates in the planning and cashing in on it. I have a whole thread on that. But just focusing on Lutnick here.
Yeah.
Cantor Fitz. The highlighted names are the Cantor Fitzgerald employees who were active participants in a war game drill. Right there. Practice makes perfect right there. Cantor Fitzgerald employees have participated in a 1998 economic security war game with the U.S. Navy. 100%. All of them. And then it goes on. Former Navy four-star Admiral William Bud Flanagan. He was a senior managing director. Howard Lutnick himself participated in this and others. And it's important to understand that this is the military. This is the Epstein class we're talking about here. You know, the military industrial complex.
Yeah.
But, and then of course, what's really crazy and people are really furious about this is Lutnick laughing as Trump describes how Lutnick survived 9/11. Can you watch this?
Yeah, go for it. Good stuff. Good and relevant. Turn on the volume though. You got it on mute. Click the mute button there.
Wait a minute.
On the bottom.
You're not showing my screen share.
No, I am, but you're on another screen.
Oh, I got you. Hold on a second.
It's 53 seconds. Just click the speaker so it's unmuted.
How about now? Can you hear it now?
No, because it's not playing. We're looking at another window, I guess.
All right, so what I'm playing, you're not playing. Hold on a second.
Yeah.
I made the mistake of going over to YouTube.
No, I can see the YouTube screen. Yeah.
Nah, this is YouTube on the forum, which is different.
Yeah, on the forum. Yeah, play that.
Watch this and you'll understand why the internet is exploding over this. Exploding.
Okay.
It was delayed because his wife insisted that he finally, after years, take his child to school. So he took his child to school. That
Everybody's
one day,
laughing.
Normally he would have been in the building at 6 o'clock in the morning. That's that business, right? So you owe your wife a lot and your child a lot, right? But his wife insisted that he take his child to school. For 5 years, he didn't do it. He was horrible. What kind of a father was he? Okay, I'll do it. And he was therefore driving down at 8:43, whatever the time was, down the West Side Highway, and he saw the plane go into the side of the building. He said, wow. And he occupied the top three floors of the World Trade Center, of the one building of the World Trade Center. And you know what happened there? He lost 100% of the people in that, his whole company was there.
Willard.
Wow.
Willard, you should pass on that link to your Gen Z friends. I'm sure they'll enjoy it.
That's a good one.
Yeah, good stuff. Here's the last one.
There's another one too here.
Jeffrey Epstein and 9/11. This is the same Howard Lutnick that is now Trump's Commerce Secretary.
Since Tuesday, we've been mentioning a certain company, the bond trading firm Cantor Fitzgerald. They employed about 1,000 people on several top floors of the World Trade Center. The head of Cantor Fitzgerald, Howard Lutnick, just happened to be out of the office that day that the terrorists struck.
We are really focused on trying to make sure that our 700 families who lost a member of their family are taken care of. And so I spent the day yesterday and part of the day in talking to our insurance company. Our insurance company, CNA, told me that they would, they told our guys, they didn't tell me, and then they told me that that they were willing to treat this as an accidental death, which means that they would double the policy for all of my victims upstairs and all of us, and so that added $35 million to that group upstairs. But the sad thing is, so $35 million sounds like so much money, but if you divide it by 700 people,
it's only $50,000. It's not enough to. So that's why we need to work on our foundation. We've got the average employee we have is around 33 years old. So
33.
They've got,
whoa.
They're just married. We have probably a dozen women who are pregnant with babies who just lost their husbands.
That's a good. Give me a link to that video. Cool. I like that one.
I'll post. Okay. I mean, it's right here. You can. It's right to YouTube.
Oh, you just played it off YouTube.
Yeah, but what people... Now, I got it in the forum right here. I got all this stuff in the forum under... Just do a search on Lutnick.
Okay, that's a good one.
Under Epstein hoax. And I have a cross-posted elsewhere. But what people are really angry...
Okay.
Really angry about is... basically, Lutnick kept the money for himself and his close friends. It didn't go to all these... I don't know. He claimed how many hundreds of... Cantor Fitzgerald people died in the towers or something. I mean, none of the money went to the ordinary people that worked at Cantor Fitzgerald. He basically kept it for himself. But no one would be looking at this stuff if it wasn't for Lutnick's connection to Epstein and the fact that he's still in the cabinet. I can't believe. And everyone is saying that Lutnick is at a much higher level than Trump. In fact, people are calling Lutnick a handler of Trump. In terms of rank, that Trump is just a stooge and that somebody like Lutnick is actually a handler for Trump on behalf of what has been referred to as the Epstein class, people who are above the law. So,
Chickpea meringue is challenging you in the forums. Did you
I know. That's one reason why I went out and got a lot of this stuff.
Sorry, he was delayed because his wife insisted that he finally, after years, take his child to school.
Look at him. So he's fucking... I mean, it's crazy. The guy's laughing on camera.
I know, but you could say he's laughing at the story that...
No, it's totally inappropriate.
I know.
He's not remembering 9/11 as a tragedy at all.
No, and he's laughing that he didn't take his child to school. That's the funny part that he's laughing at. Not laughing at the tragedy. Come on.
Why is he laughing at all?
His boss is making a joke about him.
How can you joke about? Wait a minute, this is a guy who's claiming hundreds of his employees died in the towers.
Oh, I know that, but come on, it's a funny ha-ha joke that he never took his son to school except that day. What a coincidence.
Listen to what this guy says.
Secretary of Commerce, know about that fateful September day 25 years ago, and maybe more importantly, where did he learn of all that information? Let's start at the beginning. In 2001, Howard Lutnick was the CEO of a very powerful Wall Street firm called Cantor Fitzgerald.
So I don't know if you want to get into the details of it. It's all there in the forum. I don't know how Howard Lutnick is going to be able to remain in this cabinet because he's a bleeding sore when it comes to.
Yeah, they're working on him.
Yeah.
Working him over.
But obviously, Trump feels obligated to defend people like Lutnick and make excuses for him. I mean, it's crazy. Here's Trump telling Lutnick's story.
Flatland said it just needs a laugh track. That's funny.
More questions from Willard.
What else you got, Willard?
Yeah. Okay, here's the last one. The firefighters, how can you get that many actors to pretend they died? You know, the firefighters and then some of the witnesses.
Well, first of all, there's only so many firefighters that did the talking to represent the 343. I believe that's the number, 7. So you only need a few representatives, just like you need only a few representative parents and wives, that kind of thing.
I'll tell you what, Willard. That's not the question people should be asking. A controlled demolition is a self-evident truth. I know it when I see it without a doubt. And so do you. All of us do. So the question is, how could thousands of firemen or construction workers from around the country not speak up about 9/11 being a controlled demolition when they knew it? They may not have known it that day or that week, maybe not that month.
What about all the demolition people like CDI?
Right. And so the real question that the Gen Zers should be asking is, my God, how corrupt are all these baby boomers that went along with this and rolled over for it? How dirty are they? How much are they being paid? Or what's the pressure on them, the social pressure? Or just how decadent and dirty and corrupt are they in their personal lives that they don't mind rolling over for a big fat lie like this? That's the question people should be asked. That's the question I ask every day of my life now. Like cops in Sandy Hook, how could they be going along with it? How could they not be calling it out?
Money. Money.
Money.
Money. Money.
Hold time. 1 minute. 29
Willard,
seconds.
Willard, thanks for calling. We got another caller. Thank you, Willard.
Yep. You're welcome.
Tear him up.
This message has been transcribed. 1 moment.
Hold on a sec. Do we have a call? Oh. We have a caller in, or go ahead.
Hang on 1 second.
Oh, okay. Were you, I heard transcription services in the background.
Is that, am I on?
Go ahead.
Just to point out, what people are angry about is that it looks like Lutnick pocketed the settlement.
Okay.
The original, it was, I guess, almost half a million.
Go ahead. Where are you calling from? What's your name again? I think I know, but just to be sure.
Yeah, it's Sean from Idaho.
Sean from Idaho. Welcome to the show.
These crisis actors are exposing each other because they're fighting over the money. Fighting over the money.
Sean, okay, Sean, go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay, I think I told you last time I talked to you guys that I have a personal friend in the Trump administration.
Okay, is that Howard?
Sounds far-fetched, but it's true. Anyway, I'm not going to name his name, but he's a close personal friend and former business associate of Howard.
Of Howard Lutnick.
So
okay.
I'll tell you exactly what he's told me about all of this.
Oh, here, okay. Let's go. This is good.
Well, I don't know much about the being out of the office at the moment thing. You know, I think they were all involved in stuff in some way. But as far as the money goes, not only the insurance money, but, you know, I'm not sure what happened with that. He didn't tell me much about that. But they had what they did is everybody that was killed or not killed on that day, they basically did not pay any of them. Okay. And they were telling, the way they told me the story is that they didn't know if they were going to have their doors even open come the next, you know, open trading day, because they didn't know how this was going to affect their stock and everything they were holding. So, you know, all their primary dealer for the Federal Reserve.
Okay.
Cantor Fitzgerald.
Okay.
By the way, another thing people are looking at is the short selling of the airline stocks in advance of 9/11. Young people are looking into that now because of this scandal around Lutnick.
Which would not surprise me at all, you know, because that also ties into this whole latest thing with that day we're doing with the, with the tariff thing. But anyway, what I was told is they did that to protect the company.
Did what? Not pay out?
They didn't pay anybody their stuff. Basically, anyone that might have got killed on that day or didn't get killed, not here to argue that, but supposedly, and this made news at the time, supposedly they basically did not send out any checks. So in other words, the families of the victims did not get their paycheck that they were due. Okay, so this made big national news. And so what I was told that they did, just to set the record straight and give you all the information that I personally know, is I was told that they cut these people in as, again, if these people existed, just let me caveat that, they cut these people in on like a profit sharing program because it was such bad press that they cut the families in on a profit sharing program. What they tell me, they made them all rich. So anyway, I just wanted to put that 2 cents in. That's what I was told.
Well, it says,
personal friend.
It says today, Cantor Fitzgerald is majority owned by trust for the benefit of Howard Lutnick's children, with his sons Brandon and Kyle acting as the key controlling trustees.
Well, remember, Lutnick claims his brother died in the towers. So that's a question. Did he really have a brother? And where is that brother now?
Has anyone ever proven on the forums that they had a, he had a brother, or disproven it?
I have to go over to Clues Forum and see if that's an invented, a Vic Sim.
I think his brother is just him. Morph.
Okay. Well, that wouldn't surprise me. I mean, that's how they kind of how they roll a lot of times. That's what they do.
Cantor Fitzgerald was not started by Howard Lutnick. It was founded by in 1945 by Bernard Gerald Cantor and John Fitzgerald as a bond brokerage and investment bank. Public sources do not detail a specific seed capital story for Bernard Cantor, only that he founded BJ Cantor and Company in 1945 as a fixed income interdealer brokerage, which later evolved into Cantor Fitzgerald. Howard Lutnick joined the already established firm in 1983 and rose to president by 1991, ultimately gaining control through succession and legal battles with the Cantor family. There you go.
So he's a vulture capitalist. He's a predator, predatory capitalist.
Yeah, sounds like some Jewish tactics. No offense, man.
No, it's you're on the mark there. That's how that works. Yeah. You know, a lot of people don't even remember the 1993 truck bombing of the World Trade Center, alleged truck bombing, which was an FBI sting operation involving the blind sheikh Omar Abdel Rahman and others. The FBI actually had an infiltrator in the group who was very close to the blind sheikh, and he's the guy who rented the truck, secured the explosives. The FBI confidential informant was the one who set everything up. And he even he tried to talk his FBI handler into replacing the explosive material with a dummy, with dummy powder of some kind. And the FBI handler wouldn't hear of it. Wouldn't hear of it. Absolutely insisted that Emad Salem, who was their infiltrator, their confidential informant, that he used genuine explosives for the event. And so the question is, no one would have had an office in the World Trade Center following the 19... Would you have wanted to work in the World Trade
Center? No, yeah, that's right. That's well established.
Right.
In lore, anyway, that they all moved off-site. Can't, yeah. So that's interesting.
And another thing, too, as far as I told my friend that, that you know, it's pretty much everybody thinks that Howard is the handler. And he disagreed with that. He said he will say that Howard is probably the number two most powerful man in the government besides Trump.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, besides the vice president, I guess, but in the inner cabinet, you mean he's the one that has the most influence over Trump? Yeah.
I
still find the phrase Epstein class to be useful in this respect. Even if Epstein were a non-existent character, it's a great designation for an entire layer of the elite who are completely above the law when it comes to securities fraud, money laundering, tax evasion, Ponzi schemes, bribery, extortion, and maybe some prostitution on the side. And that's what Lutnick represents, because he would have been arrested and charged already by now, you know, for a lot of things, and may yet be. I mean, after all, we have a former prime minister of Norway who they say has been arrested and charged. Now the prime minister of Poland has said he's setting up a special investigative team to plumb through all those millions of files, because apparently Epstein was importing hookers from Poland as well as Ukraine, Russia, and anywhere else he could get them cheap. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's the gift that keeps on giving. You know, Larry Summers, Secretary of the Treasury under Obama, maybe, or Clinton, I don't remember. And President of Harvard has had to resign. But so far, there haven't been any high-profile arrests yet here in the United States. But apparently, there are some taking place in Europe. Peter Mandelson has been arrested and charged. I don't think these guys have actually been charged with violating the Official Secrets Act. But what I'm going to be looking at is the criminal charges surrounding people who passed privileged information to Epstein and are now being charged with that. That's what Andrew was charged with.
Mm-hmm.
He was officially trade envoy for the UK. I guess if you're the Duke of Kent or whatever his title is, that's one of your jobs. You promote UK products around the world. And so it's a perfect opportunity to partner with somebody for some insider trading. And apparently that's what he did. And that's what he's been charged with over there in the UK. And that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for the things that blend over into the racketeering and money laundering and securities fraud, insider trading. That's really where these people are going to be nailed, because that's the whole purpose of what they do, really.
Ali Bongo Magic Trick said there were no insurance payouts because it was an illusion. No one was killed or injured.
Well,
so
you're saying nobody got any money. You're saying Lutnick didn't actually make any money off it. Larry Silverstein didn't actually collect
the
double indemnity.
Ali Bongo said there are no payouts to the so-called victims.
No, it's because there were no victims. They were fake.
Right. That's why there was. Right. Got it. Now you're getting it.
But a lot of people still made a lot of money, and we paid for it.
For sure. Probably, yeah. All right. We're at the 1 hour mark. Anything else, Sean, before we wrap it up?
No, that's it. Thanks for taking my call.
Good info. Keep feeding us the info. We appreciate
it. Yeah. If you got a friend that knows Lutnick, yeah. Anything more you can come up with. Sure.
Yeah.
It's a pretty small world. And it's pretty crazy.
I want to recommend a video I posted in the forum.
Oh, wait, do you think he's going to last in cabinet, or he's going to be out? He's going to be
out. Oh, I don't know. I think I don't really have any inside dope on that. I was just kind of given the same stuff that everybody else was, that he was, you know, went to Epstein's Island with his family and all this stuff. I mean, he's under a lot of pressure. He's definitely in the hot seat right now, but who knows
you think he'll survive?
I would say yeah, because of his tribe. I mean, at least gonna land on his feet somewhere.
There's a video I posted in the forums by a guy named Howie Dewey on Lutnick. And this guy breaks down the Ponzi schemes that Lutnick and Trump are involved in with crypto. And he predicts that that's ultimately what's going to bring these people down, are the crypto Ponzi
schemes.
Have you heard
about their crypto that his sons are starting?
His sons, yeah, right, exactly.
I don't think it'll be a problem, but...
Well... You know,
crypto's already falling out of favor right now. No one's talking about it.
As I was watching this video on Lutnick and these Ponzi schemes on crypto, about 45 minutes in, he gets into a discussion of the short selling of airline stocks on in advance of 9/11 at Alex Brown, and there's chief executive at the time, Harvey Buzz Krongard, and speculates on whether now they're doing the same thing with the tariffs. Mm-hmm. In other words, Trump says, I'm going to do this, gives them advance notice. Maybe they do a pump and dump of their stocks. So in other words, the same kind of insider trading that was done with the airline, short selling the airlines, shorting airline stocks in advance of 9/11 is now going on with the tariffs.
Yeah. Well, Lynn, we got Sean. I'll let you go. I got one more call. I'm going to squeeze one more in. Thank you, Sean.
Thank you.
Okay, one more caller. Where are you calling from? What's your name?
Hey, this is Dave from Mexico.
Dave from Mexico. How are the cartels?
Well, I can tell you they are real, but mostly in the mainland.
Yeah.
Mexico, the cartels in the
Can you tell us how you know they're how you know they're real? Can you just tell us?
Sure.
He's bought fentanyl from them.
Your wife's Mexican, and how does she know?
So she grew up in everyone she knows, including herself, and they do operate similar to Salt Guy Frank.
Yeah,
he had that funny comment last night. He's like, "Oh, the unions were doing that back in the day," and that's fairly true. That was a good comment, because that's kind of how they operate in most of Mexico. So I have almost everybody I know, if they're from the mainland, their parents' business or whatever For example, right now, my wife's uncle, he's in a place called Valle de Bravo, which is like the headquarters of the monarch butterfly. So it's a beautiful place. And he does a lot of landscaping.
Yeah.
And so all the material that he has to get for his landscaping business, the cartels take a cut of that. And then I have a friend who has older elderly parents that are both veterinarians in Mazatlan. And that's a completely different state, but it applies the same in most of mainland Mexico. And they got shaken down as well. And then my wife's uncle in Culiacan, which is like, that's the center of narco reality, Culiacan, they killed him. So my wife has it's actually her great uncle, because it's her grandmother's sister's husband. They killed him. He was a farmer rancher, and they wanted to use his massive land in order to sort of migrate through there and take their drugs and do their business through his massive land.
Was it near the border? This land was near the border?
Culiacan's not near a border, no, but it is in the state of Sinaloa, which is probably the number one state for narco activity, and they killed him.
John C. Dvorak today on No Agenda podcast estimated that as much as 20% of the Mexican economy has to go through the cartels, because they've already laundered all their profits into legitimate businesses, organizations, you know, civil society. They're deeply embedded in Mexican society. So 20%, he's saying as much as 20% of the Mexican economy, one way or another, is involved with the cartels. Is that an exaggeration?
No, it's probably an under evaluation, because one thing that, and I want you to be rest assured, fakeologist, your parents in Ajajic are fine, because one rule that the narcos usually never break is they don't mess with gringos. They don't mess with foreigners.
Yeah, we talked about that yesterday. Yeah, that's good.
Well, the gringo is their biggest customer. The gringos are biggest customer. Right. Why would they mess with their best customer?
Yeah, so they don't usually mess with the gringos. I do have one story of a French guy who was probably not doing his business in Mexico City the right way, but he did get killed by the cartel, and that's the only international that I know of who has experienced that. But I also know friends who are in the music world and do like low-level DJ type activity, and you know, they've been in some real scary situations with the narcos, because of course the nightlife is a world that they control wholeheartedly. But hey, the biggest thing about the cartel that I want you to understand, the party that runs the country, so Claudia Sheinbaum is the president. She's Jewish, but she's she's part of the Morena party. And that party, it's well known throughout Mexico that it's been controlled for a long time. And also the last president, AMLO, he was also the same party. So the same party two or three terms now, everybody just knows. It's like when I lived in D.C., everybody knew the politicians were actors. They just weren't good looking enough to be in Hollywood. Everybody knows that. It's a fact. It's just a well-known fact. So the party that is in charge is owned by the cartel, or at the very least in collusion.
So Sheinbaum is not some innocent bystander. You know, when Larry Fink from BlackRock goes down there to meet with her, that's not an, you know, she knows what's going on, doesn't she?
Yeah, I mean, I personally know the daughter of the president, or whoever's in charge of that party, and they're all Jewish. So it's like it's like a Jewish cabal in that party. But the party stands for, it's like a populist party, and Morena means brown, and most of the people who vote for this party are darker skin. And that party is controlled by the Jews in Mexico City, which is a heavy, heavy population. Tons of Hasidics, and more Hasidics in Mexico City than maybe New York City. Definitely more than DC. And you know how many there are in DC, Lynn, and I lived there, and there's more Hasids and more Orthodox Hasidic Jews in Mexico City.
I shouldn't be surprised to hear that, because there are quite a few in Argentina as well. And that's why they're buying up Patagonia. Yeah.
Yep, that's true. That is true.
There was a scandal in Mexico some years back where Mossad, Israeli agents, were caught infiltrating the Mexican National Assembly and attempting to plant bombs there. I believe the plot was foiled and it was exposed, and some of these Israelis were kicked out. They may have expelled the Israeli ambassador. That's something people can go back and research. But yes, there was an attempt by the Israelis to do a false flag bombing of the Mexican National Assembly quite a few years ago, probably about 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah, well, this thing in Guadalajara, it seems like a false flag too. Like these burning cars, that's just theater that the government did. I mean, what makes sense to me is that the government put these cars on fire, get people scared, and so they can control them easier. And they actually locked down the whole state, I think. The whole state of Jalisco was on lockdown for some time.
Which is pretty big, right? Pretty big, I mean.
Very big state. Yeah.
Oh, Jalisco's huge. I mean, I've been all over that state, and it's beautiful. But one time I did get stopped. The only sort of scary moment I've ever had in Mexico, living here 7 years now, was in a place called Mazamitla, and that's a mountain town in the state of Jalisco. And we got stopped, and we're in the middle of nowhere by these masked narco people. And I was with three Mexican women, and they weren't very nice at all. But they didn't do anything. Like, there was no violence. They just wanted to see who we were. We were actually going to Mazamitla's very nice mountain town that apparently is a lot of narcos have vacation homes there, so it's like a vacation spot for narcos, but we were going there to vacation too, and they just checked us out to make sure, you know, they thought they knew who we were, and they checked our papers and everything, but they were pretty rude, but no violence or anything.
I'm sharing a screen right now that references that event back in 2001, 2001 Mexican Chamber of Deputies bombing affair.
Okay. Wow, right after 9/11.
Bombing attempt. The attack was attempted by 34-year-old ex-Israeli Special Forces Colonel Salvador Garrison Smack. What a name. Along with another perpetrator.
Garrison Smack.
Yeah, so you can look at that in 2001. Wow.
Right after 9/11. Right after, yeah.
Yeah, October 10th. Yeah. Wow, so they had their own little 9/11. Look at that, a few days later.
There you go.
Keep we were all worried about the anthrax letters. The anthrax letters,
Keep the terrorism going around.
Following a morning meeting, the two individuals claimed to be press photographers.
Hey, Dave, what do you think of our silver theory on Mexico?
I like that. I didn't know of that until Frank, the salt guy, mentioned it. It really makes a whole lot of sense. But one other thing, just to be clear about this narco situation, in the California, the Baja California Sur and Norte both, the one area that they do control is water. So there are a lot of homes here that don't have access to water, and they have to depend on trucks, water trucks, to bring in the water. And then also, the municipal water company is called Umsapas, and that's a municipal water company.
Yeah.
Everybody says they are controlled by narcos too. So although there's no violence here, there hasn't been since 2016. 2016 there was violence. There were people hanging from bridges and whatnot. But
wait, is that confirmed, or that was the media?
I confirm. So there's an American woman who I know very well. She's from Colorado, but she spends her winters here. She said that she saw with her own eyes, and she's a 75-year-old woman who has, I believe her. You know, it's like,
okay,
it's secondhand, right? But this woman is.
Well, there was something hanging from the bridge, but we don't know if it was a real body.
Exactly.
Either.
Exactly, it could have been a dummy. Yeah. Sure, it could have been a theater stage dummy.
That's the
problem. That happened in two places. It could have been theater in two places, organized theater, but La Paz and Cabo San Lucas. It happened in both those places at the same time.
Well, do you believe what goes on in Israel is theater? Or back in the day when the buses were blowing up. I mean, the terror is for the local people, too. In other words, they need the local population always under this threat, this terror. And the people of Israel were brought up to be afraid of everyone else, thinking because they were the chosen people, everyone is afraid of them and they should be afraid of everyone else. So the terror works both ways, I think.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but just to confirm exactly what your parents' housekeeper confirmed to you, the narcos are real. They kind of work, like Frank said, they kind of work like the unions, or really more like the old Italian mob, I think.
In the 50s. Yeah, I think that was real. I think they did shake down people. Like they said, do you have
Italian mob? You know,
do you have window insurance? Yeah, you know, they come around.
Well, the question is,
you have window insurance, because if you don't have it, what happens if someone throws a rock through your glass? Yeah. What are you going to do? Or the fire
question,
insurance.
The question is, is the Trump administration using this staged or exaggerated event to justify the idea of droning in Mexico or boots on the ground right there in Jalisco or something?
Well,
in other words,
Frank would say they're steering the boat. Like they're out in front of this ship. And I think that's a compelling argument.
Well,
We may have to be living off mafia supplied water here in Maryland, because what's been reported is the greatest, largest sewer spill.
Nice.
In American history, just north of Washington, D.C. I hear people are already complaining about the smell there, right into the Potomac River. Oh, so that's gonna go into the Chesapeake Bay. That's really gonna damage.
Oh, yum! You need a bridge
seafood
over
industry.
That bay. Start building that bridge. You don't want to wade through that.
Oh, thing. The bridge is another scandal. They haven't even cleaned up the remnant yet. They haven't.
Did they get the ship out of the channel yet? Is that there?
No. Like, well, the ship is gone, but the remnants
goodness.
Of the bridge. They haven't even cleared up the wreckage of the old bridge. And Sean Duffy, the Secretary of Transportation, was in Maryland basically complaining about how incompetent the governor, Wes Moore, and his administration
are. Well,
of course.
They haven't even
gotten started on a new bridge.
We need a technocrat. We need a governor, a technocratic governor. We need AI.
We need AI.
All these idiot people. Hey, Dave, thanks for calling. Good call.
Yeah. Call again.
Hey, I appreciate it. More. I appreciate the show. And if Tim Osmond flakes out on you again, just call Lynn. Have her do two shows a week.
Lynn, would you do two shows a week?
I would sit in for Tim Osmond, and I'd address, maybe I'd focus on some of the stuff. You know, he likes to get into the entertainment, the movies, the TV series, the symbolism. I could focus on some of that. People
All
like
right.
that stuff. They eat that up. So
honestly,
I'm about the money. I'm about the shakedown, the gangster.
Show me the money. Well, guess what? Silver didn't go through the roof today. So I think that was a false YouTube report that I was following about them running out of money. So silver is up, but it didn't shoot through 100. So
I have some gold coins saved.
All right.
But I can tell you, unloading them is a pain in the ass.
Yeah,
if you even go with a single $5 gold coin, they will practically look up your butt. It's just a pain in the neck to unload gold.
I know. You got to go. Oh, Frank shared me a YouTube video of a guy in Atlanta that sells gold. It's something like, or buys gold or watches. It's called something Sell Your Stuff in Atlanta, and he videos all the interactions and puts them on YouTube. Does anyone know what that is? I gotta find that. Frank shared it with me. It's he gets guys coming in with watches and jewelry, and he makes an offer, and some of the interactions are quite funny. I can't remember what it's called. Just type into the great Google searches gold or watch or silver dealer in Atlanta, and you'll find it. He's an Indian guy, apparently. It's very funny. But anyway, thanks a lot for calling, Dave. And thank you, Lynn. And Actually, it was okay that Tim was off. I'm behind on all my year-end stuff, so I had to do a lot of accounting anyway. So if someone doesn't show up, I just use the time to do what I'm supposed to be doing instead of talking. So thank you, Lynn, again. Thanks to all the donors. We had one donor. Actually, I have hardly any donors anymore. I guess the whole idea of donating is over in value for value. But I did have a donor, Tunax. Tunax is a longtime donor. Thank you, Tunax, and Anonymous as well. Thank you. And of course, thanks, Lynn, for keeping this thing going. Lynn's at the top of the pops right up here. Thank you, Lynn, for that.
Everything's in the forum. All this material is in the forum. You can spend hours and hours there on any subject you like.
All right. And I'm moving the website this weekend. So wish me luck. Oh, I haven't done that myself in a while. So I'm
My
trying to do it.
Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. So I have to move the website. So if you can't get access to it, which is not a big deal because it's really gone down in hits, at least the main blog, but the forums is busy.
Yeah, so Chickpea Meringue has a completely different perspective on organized crime, has been posting there.
Okay.
And, that's what we've been talking about tonight, is what's the character of organized crime. And is it really the way it's presented to us? Or is everything concealed behind the scenes? And are they deploying actors to take the fall guys to take the rap? And the real criminals are behind the scenes. And Chickpea Meringue has a interesting thread on that I think sort of, it blends into what we're talking about.
And Brian, BioChair Brian, said he would fill in for Osmond. Well, I'd have one rule that we couldn't talk about BioChar. I don't know if you'd be able to do that.
But we can talk about communitarian law.
Oh, no, please. And Brian also recommends watching the short Utopia on Omeletto. I love Omeletto. And it's actually, I've seen it. It's funny. So just look up Utopia and Omeletto. I love short films. And that actually was a really, really good one. 1.7 million views. A man lives in a surveilled country. Jack has just come back to his homeland of Australia after over a decade away in paradise, and he comes back to a surveillance state. So good recommendation, Brian. And thanks, everyone, for listening in. And we'll see you next Sunday with Prophet of Fiction. And Mr. E says he's coming back, so I might ask him to come on Tuesday.
Make a point of asking him about Victoria's Secret.
Oh, he's talked about them endlessly. Okay. Oh, yeah.
I'm telling you, the Epstein thing and Les Wexner, it's like Epstein was going around basically recruiting models for Victoria's Secret.
Well, that would be more in line with the idea that most of these rich people don't want young girls. They want boys.
Possibly.
And of all the Victoria's Secrets are boys.
Not all of them, but probably.
Well, tell me which ones aren't, and I'll get back to you on that. All right. Thanks, everyone. We got to get out of here because it's time to go. Take care.